Welcome to the Sunshine Economy, work and wages in South Florida. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening. No one likes to be average, do they? A few want to be typical or ordinary, but plenty of Floridians hope for average. They work hard to be common. After all, they're not making any more money today than they were a decade ago. The average annual pay in Florida is the same today as it was a decade ago when adjusted for inflation. Statewide, the average yearly paycheck came to just under $54,000 last year. That's about the same as it was 10 years earlier. Now, those paydays remain a good chunk below the average pay nationwide. We'll talk more about the statistics and what they tell us about working in Florida later on in the program. The data is revealing about working in the Sunshine State and the future of work and wages here. But let's start with the voices behind the figures.
I'm barely getting by, and it sucks to struggle all the time. I wouldn't want to leave school, you know, struggling and just to go struggle some more in the real world.
I feel like I've made that American dream progression to have done better than my parents financially, but I wake up every day with insecurity.
I have a lot of illiquid income that I can't really use. It doesn't translate into disposable income. It's just something that I possess.
I think finances or economics in Florida, it's like an EKG. It goes up, it goes down, it goes up, and goes down. And that's the only way you can tell that the economy is on life support.
I mean, it used to be easier. I mean, there was a time in my life in my 30s when I worked three jobs and went to school part time. I don't know if I could do that now.
You hear the frustration and fear, anxiety and optimism when you talk about money with people working in this economy and strip away all the personal identity that's wrapped up in what we make and avoid the suspicion of assigning value to someone based on a number.
My name is Andy Haroldson, and I'm a college English instructor, and I'm also a graduate student. About 14 months ago, I was making about between $55,000 and $60,000 a year as a truck driver. And my wife was making almost $100,000 a year as a consultant. Since then, the consultant work dried up and I quit working and started school. So now my wife has taken a job making half what she's making, what she was making, and I, for a year, didn't work at all. So we went from making almost in the neighborhood of $150,000 a year to about $50,000 a year, pretty much in the space of a few months. And that, we had to we have to make sure that we buy only what we need. For example, I wish we could get a new rug, you know? The old rug's not bad, but, maybe a few other things. I'm not going to go back into truck driving. I've gone in and out of truck driving on and off since about 1998. I'm not going to go back into it now unless some emergency happens and I'm forced to. But so I'm going to stay with teaching, and I believe that if I stay with teaching, and I'm going to finish up a second master's degree, that will allow me to get a pretty good, probably a pretty good paying job as a tenured assistant professor somewhere. It'll give me enough of a wage to take care of my needs. I like my students. I like talking to them. I like listening to them, helping them out, listening to their concerns, interacting with them. I have, if I do have passions, a couple of them are grammar and writing. I love to talk about grammar. It's kind of a running joke. I'm one of the few people who gets excited at in a conversation about commas. I tell them that the most important skills they're going to take out of college with them, I believe this is true, I cannot emphasize this enough, are writing and research skills. These are skills that they are going to need over and over again. They'll use those. What I want? No, I'm not young, and I, you know, so I have to start thinking about retirement, and my wife too. You know, the prospects for her to find some pretty good paying work are pretty good also. So between the two of us, with her salary and my salary, we should be able to make enough money to where we will be able to live comfortably in retirement, which is, I'm thinking ahead 10 or 15 years now.
Andy Haraldson used to spend about 70 hours per week behind the wheel of his 18-wheeler. He's in the classroom now, both as an adjunct faculty member at a local community college and as a student working toward his Master's of Science in Communication. When he was working full-time in trucking, he was the exception, seeing his pay jump about 30% over the past few years in Florida. But he left that job, opting instead to stay off the road and at home, hoping to be hired on a college campus in the years ahead. Education and healthcare are two fields that have experienced sustained job growth over the past decade, despite the Great Recession and the personnel cutbacks at local school districts. Porpoise Evans worries about the schools. Porpoise was a nickname when he swam a lot growing up. He wound up adopting it as his name. Evans has one child in public school and sends another to private school. He knows he's got it good as an attorney working in Brickell, but that doesn't stop him from his own economic uneasiness.
I have seen modest income growth, but compared to the cost of living in South Florida, I'd say it has felt stagnant. I think it's been fueled by growth and a natural progression. I've been practicing for 12 years. I do think that I am in a privileged position as an attorney with a specialty and a strong network in Miami. So I do have a special situation that that a lot of people don't. If I were to uproot my family, you know, that would, I'd be starting from scratch in terms of building relationships, despite my nuts and bolts knowledge of the law. I'm a public school advocate. I'm the son of two public school teachers. I believe in public education. Having said that, I have one child in public schools in Miami and another in a private school. And the one who is still in public school, that'll probably only be for another year or so, because I don't have faith in the quality of education that they're getting. Therefore, I spend, at least 20% of my after-tax income on, you know, my daughter's education, and that'll double in a year and a half. We shall see whether it means I remain in Miami or not. I love the culture. I love the climate. I love the potential to be a professional in this city, but I might not stay here because of that one factor. I don't think there's a strong sense that there's real wage growth. I think that the people that I interact with have which is the middle class, upper middle class area. I think that even among that realm, there's a feeling that the pie is not expanding in Miami. You know, there's a competition for, Not necessarily a shrinking, but certainly not an expanding pool of financial opportunity. Well, I'm constantly looking for ways to cut costs. I'm not at a point in my career where it's about finding new investment opportunities. I do focus on being as thrifty as possible. I think that as we focus on the economy, we get a false sense of enthusiasm when the stock market is continuing to go gangbusters again, and we're continuing to ignore folks at the bottom. I think the income gap is growing. Everything I read shows that the middle class is shrinking, and the income gap is just untenable. And I think that there's a real problem lurking, and I think Miami could be on the forefront of bigger problems.
Attorney Porpoise Evans. Social worker Lionel Lightborn works firsthand with some families on one side of that wage gap. He works at a nonprofit agency in Liberty City. It's located inside a City of Miami park in Liberty City, an area with an average household income below that of the average in Miami-Dade County, which is below the state average, which is below the national average. The agency started in 1966.
Hi there, how are you? I'm Tom Hudson. I'm recording with Lionel.
Yes, Mr. Lionel.
Lightborn has worked at the nonprofit for 4 years.
Okay, how you doing?
Hey, good. Tom.
How are you?
Tom, how are you?
I make a doable living. Comfortable, you know, I guess for me personally, I'm not comfortable unless everyone else is comfortable. It doesn't do me good to see people homeless. So I don't think there's ever going to be a such thing as being comfortable with me, as long as there's going to be at least one homeless person in the world. My income, if I was a single person, I would be just, when I say on the poverty line or just above it. But together with my wife, we will be actually in the middle class, which is something else. And it's part of the strategy. It's amazing how you can get power. I mean, get paid or professionally get paid to empower other people while at the same time discovering ways to empower yourself. So it's that marriage thing is, yeah, I'm going to tell you, it helps in so many ways. You know what? The person that does our income tax consider us as a part of the economic middle class, but nevertheless, it's doable for me because I have an advantage of working in social work. So with the various agency partnership, I'm able to maneuver with the knowledge I receive. But if I was from a consumer standpoint or a client standpoint, I think it would be devastating, and it would be hard to see your way through, depending on the wage that they offer and the wage that really should be. You know what? I'm like a fish in water when it comes to social work. The next 5 years for my income, I'm always, you know, putting myself going above and beyond. Financially secure, if I had $1 million in Florida right now, I still wouldn't feel financially secure. $1 million is nothing in the state of Florida. Looking at the not so much the wage, because it's not a wage hike. It's so much the price hike when it comes to home. I mean, it's basic necessity, homes, groceries, et cetera, transportation. So even at a millionaire status, I still wouldn't be secure. I'm an investor. You know, when I mean by investor, and it's not just in 401ks, 401bs, Roth IRAs, et cetera. It's an investor. I always invest in not just in short term with myself and my wife, but in long term. How would what I purchase benefit my grandchildren?
Liberty City social worker Lionel Lightborn, thinking long term. That's something Gary Rosenberger keeps in mind during his day job. After years as a financial reporter, he started his own economic forecasting company, selling his analysis to financial firms like banks and big investors. Rosenberger is a snowbird. He lives on Miami Beach for 4 months of the year. It's one of three residences he maintains, in addition to a couple of other properties. But these riches are fairly recent for him.
5 years ago, I didn't have much income. I was kind of in a dire situation. I was starting my own company. I had lost an assignment that paid pretty well. I was taking care of dying parents and a lawsuit, actually, when I started my own company. So I had virtually zero finances. Today, I'm doing pretty well. I've got a company that's up and running. Some of the deaths that occurred translated into inherited income. And because I run my own economic forecasting website, I was able to parlay my own reporting into some really neat investments. 4 or 5 years ago, I was reading in the Wall Street Journal that the real estate decline would be approximately 20 years of pain and no recovery. And shortly thereafter, I was starting to write my own stories based on talking to home builders and real estate brokers that in fact, the real estate economy is recovering. So I poured a whole bunch of money that I did have into real estate, and I'm profiting quite nicely from the fact that we went through a very bad and deep recession when things were cheap for a while. My aunt died. And my sister wanted to sell her condominium, and I wasn't going to sell in a bad market. So I actually bought her share of the condominium. I kept it, watched it decline some more, and then watched the property value quadruple. It's in Miami Beach. It's in a really nice high-rise condominium that was built in the early 70s. It's not South Beach. It's quieter than that. I walk my dog along Indian Creek and spot manatees, and it's just the greatest thing ever. On the day I sell it, I will have tripled or quadrupled what I put into it. But that's not just South Miami. That's pretty much everywhere where, I either found quality real estate or I also inherited the home that I grew up in, and that now does provide disposable rental income. The truth of the matter is that despite my ownership of a lot of stuff, I don't have that much income. I'm not rolling in cash. And I guess I'm wealthy by almost anyone's standards, but the amount of money that I can take from that wealth and just spend out of pocket, it's just not there. I actually still have to be pretty frugal. I have overdrawn when I wasn't careful. And because I'm asset rich and I have a certain portfolio with a lot of banks, they cut me a break. And, they'll say, oh, we're so sorry we didn't call you to point out the fact that you're overdrawn, which doesn't happen to, it would not have happened to me 5 years ago. So it's really pretty amusing.
Gary, Lionel, Porpoise, and Andy. Four people from different income levels who survived the Great Recession, some better than others. They're all working and making plans, plans that will rely on their earnings potential and the economic realities of Florida. So what are your prospects? Are you making more money today than a few years ago? Do you think you will be making more money in a few years than you do now? How and how will that impact your life? Let us know on Twitter. We're there at WLRN. Use that hashtag, Sunshine Economy. Still to come on our program, getting a raise to minimum wage.
Did y'all know that you're supposed to tip your wheelchair attendant?
No, didn't know that.
No.
So you tip them if you want to, but I didn't think you had to.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy, Work and Wages in South Florida. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. Jobs was the defining issue in the just-completed election cycle, and it promises to continue to define Governor Scott's administration. He ran his successful re-election campaign on the motto of Let's Keep Working, a nod to the hundreds of thousands of jobs that have been added in Florida during his tenure in Tallahassee. On election night, he set out this goal for his next 4 years.
Now is the time to charge boldly ahead. Texas likes to brag about being number one in job creation. But we are on their heels, and we will become number one.
During the campaign, Governor Scott opposed raising the state minimum wage above where it stands now, $7.93 an hour. With no action by the governor, the state minimum wage is due to rise to $8.05 an hour on January 1st. As long as the job doesn't receive tips, that is. If it does, the so-called tipped minimum wage will be just over $5 an hour, with the assumption that tips make up the difference. We know to tip at restaurants, the valet, and maybe for hotel maid service. But as Wilson Sayre originally reported last summer, some not-so-obvious workers also rely on tips.
Attention all passengers, attention all passengers. If you just came
through, it's a weekday afternoon at the Fort Lauderdale-Hollywood International Airport, which bustles with arriving and departing travelers. The atmosphere is equal parts excitement and stress. But for a woman we're calling Deborah, hanging out at the airport is just a day's work. She asks us not to use her real name because she's worried about losing her job. For 2 years now, Deborah has pushed wheelchairs for passengers to and from airplanes for JetBlue, Bahamas Air, and a few other airlines. And she's not just wheeling people.
If that person has four bags, you got to figure out a way how to carry the person and the luggage. Some of them, they have dogs. You got to hold a leash and all that stuff.
For the most part, she likes her job, talking with people, helping them out. They're injured, pregnant, or elderly. But here's the problem. Did you know that they are tipped positions?
No, I didn't know that.
Did y'all know that you're supposed to tip your wheelchair attendant?
No, didn't know that.
No.
So you tip them if you want to, but I didn't think you had to.
Nope, I did not know that, no.
We're not talking about it being a nice thing to tip. It's not an issue of etiquette. Deborah makes $5.50 an hour, well below Florida's regular minimum wage, $7.93, because she's supposed to be tipped. It's built into her pay. But she's not allowed to ask for a tip. It looks bad for the airline.
They don't ask you no question, you get fired right away.
On the off chance the person does know to tip, it's often not a lot.
Or most of them will tell you, oh, I'm going to give you a good tip. I'm like, oh, Lord, I'm getting $2. I've gotten 75 cents. Because the lady didn't have no money. I said, but I can't take you 75 cents. She said, please take it. Go buy yourself a can of soda.
Deborah says she often gets to the airport early and works off the clock just to see if she can get some extra tips.
I've had a lot of people come up to me in various community meetings promising me, I promise I tip, you know, especially some of the elderly activist types.
Helene O'Brien is a district director in Florida for the Service Employees International Union, 32BJ, which is trying to help service workers at the airport. She says the fix isn't raising awareness about tipping.
You know, a lot of folks on disability, they don't have the money to tip. And it's, in some ways, I don't know, in my opinion, it feels like just another pressure on the poor passenger.
To her, the solution is the Broward County Living Wage Ordinance. Starting last year, the ordinance set an $11.46 minimum wage for employees who work directly for the county and for companies that contract with the county. And if a worker doesn't get benefits, the wage goes up to almost $13.
There's been a huge loophole around the airport. The airlines have contracted out this work. Many of these companies that, say, push the wheelchairs, they load the bags, they clean the planes, they don't have a contract with the county. They have a contract with an airline.
Which is why they're allowed to pay so much less. O'Brien and the union have been working for almost 2 years trying to get a wage increase for workers at the airport. After a lot of pushback from the airlines, there's just now starting to be some movement from the commission. But a full-on wage increase is far off. None of the airlines we contacted were willing to comment about a potential increase. In the meantime, Deborah is trying to figure out how to juggle all her expenses.
It's tough. I had to move back home with my stepmom, my daughter and I, because she's in college, she's not working. It's not easy.
She's buying groceries with the help of food stamps. And thanks God, her daughter qualifies for financial aid.
Wilson Sarah joins us now in the Sunshine Economy. You reported this out about 6 months or so ago. How's Deborah doing?
Well, she's doing a little bit better. For all of the workers for her company, all of their wages, hourly wages, got raised to $7.93, which is the Florida minimum wage. So from the tipped Florida minimum wage, which is $4.91, to the Florida non-tipped minimum wage, which is $7.93.
Deborah's making more money today with this raise that she received, $7.93 an hour now. Tips are on top of that, is that
correct,
right?
Yeah. Yes.
And she still can't ask for tips.
Correct.
How does that, do you think, impact her feeling of financial security or insecurity?
So she's making $7.93 an hour, which is several dollars less than the Broward County Living Wage Ordinance, which is $11.46. If you're getting benefits, which she is not, and that's it goes up to $12.95 if she is. So there's still a lot of insecurity. I mean, she's living at home, which is a safety net for her. That's a support network for her. There's intangible support networks that are at play here that are often not taken into account when we're discussing these kinds of minimum wage, jumping jobs to higher wage types of discussion.
What is a workday like for Deborah?
She is called to meet people at the gates when they arrive. They have bags. They have sometimes dogs, and they're in wheelchairs. And so she's having to juggle all this stuff, bring you down to collect your bags, collect your other belongings, take you out to the curb. Some people want you to push them to their cars. So, I mean, it's not an easy job, and it's one of those jobs that appears on the surface to be part of the package when you buy your airplane ticket.
An airport is an interesting microcosm of a regional economy. It is literally the doorstep of how people enter or exit into a local economy, certainly one like this that is so tourist-based and so visitor-based as we're moving into the tourist season. And to hear these stories, like Deborah's story, who is on the front lines, they may not be necessarily considered part of the hospitality industry here, but to some regard, for elderly folks and for folks that need their assistance, this is their first experience that they're going to have in South Florida.
Despite the challenges in income, despite some of the challenges getting things like a break room, they really love their jobs. They really do feel themselves taking care of people, and that's something that they value and will not easily give up.
WLRN's Wilson Sayre. Still to come, building the future workforce of the Sunshine Economy on an unstable industry.
I think a lot of people think that we're already on borrowed time when it comes to relying on construction. We just can't forever rely on people moving to Florida and building homes for them.
This is the Sunshine Economy, Work and Wages in South Florida. I'm Tom Hudson. Are you making more money today than you were a decade ago? Do you think you'll be making more money in a few years than you are today? Let us know on Twitter, at WLRN, with the hashtag Sunshine Economy. We've heard from the voices of the workers worrying about pay, yet hopeful about their opportunities. Now the data. In 2004, the average Floridian's annual pay, adjusted for inflation, $53,940.36. By the year 2013, the average pay was $53,809.11, $131.25 less than it was a decade earlier. Of the four counties in South Florida, incomes only in Palm Beach County were higher at the end of the decade and by less than $300.
That's actually not unique to Florida. That's an issue nationally.
That's Chris McCarty. He's director of the University of Florida's Bureau of Economic and Business Research. We asked him and his staff to crunch some data on employment, occupations, and pay. You can see some of the data on our website at WLRN.org.
And I think what's clear is that there have been some increases in pay, but it tends to be among higher paid workers. And the overall average, I think, pulls it down to essentially nothing for everybody else. So if you are in, you have the benefit of being in one of those occupations where you tended to get paid a high wage, you probably do have a better wage than you did 10 years ago. Otherwise, it's the same or worse.
The stagnant income growth has come even as the state's population has grown. The labor force has grown. The job market has grown. So there are plenty more people working in Florida now compared to 10 years ago. There are plenty more people in Florida overall. But on average, workers are making about the same amount of money.
Well, if we continue along the path that we're on here in Florida, it probably doesn't bode well. It's going to be more of the same. We are, particularly in Florida, a very service-oriented economy. So more people require more services. So that stands to reason. But those are not the kinds of jobs that are going to probably respond to higher demand because there are more people.
So if Florida is to see a rising average annual wage, it's going to come from more construction jobs, essentially. Is that accurate?
In the current the way we currently have our economy, if you want to call it a business model, the way we currently do things, that's true. The major source of bigger incomes for most Floridians are going to come from things related to construction, things related to people moving here. Certainly, we do well in terms of leisure and hospitality, so people come to visit Florida. Some people do quite well with that, but the majority of jobs that are associated with that are not high-paying jobs.
Over the past 10 years, the twin industries of construction and hospitality have fueled the big job gains. In the four South Florida counties, construction jobs have grown by 8% or more in just the past year alone. That's a return to a familiar story of job growth driven by building buildings.
I think a lot of people think that we're already on borrowed time when it comes to relying on construction. We just can't forever rely on people moving to Florida and building homes for them. I suspect that in Florida there have been some efforts, I think, to develop a biotech industry. And as we have baby boomers who are retiring, I think healthcare associated with that sector. And there are some areas of Florida, certainly around Orlando, I think, where they are looking towards medical tourism as something that could be part of the future. In South Florida, I think that there is still sort of a reliance on construction. There are efforts to try and create bigger destination tourism spots. So I mean, I do think that the dredging of the Port of Miami is an innovative way of thinking. There are other ports in Florida that are looking at that. So if Florida is able to get into some kind of manufacturing where they could, in addition to take loads off ships, but have things to load on those ships, that's a different way of thinking.
Developing those industries of the future is part responding to a global market and part policy of where governments, both state government and local governments in Florida, are geared toward certain incentives. What's your sense of where that arrow is pointed?
I do think that the Governor Scott and the legislature have tried to do things that try to make Florida more business friendly. And I think in some ways it probably is. In other ways, it may not be. So I think that they have tried to make it attractive for industries to move to Florida. I don't know that we've had the gains that we would have hoped that we would have had from that. So I think perhaps we might be looking towards businesses starting up here. Certainly biotech is something that we could develop.
Floridians haven't gotten a raise adjusted for inflation in the last decade, on average. Do you think in the next decade they will?
Not unless there are some changes, and those changes would have to happen at the national level. I think we have to do something about income inequality, and trying to address that through the market doesn't seem to be an approach that's working.
When you talk about changes at the national level, what do you mean?
Well, that's where it gets kind of sticky. So I think that the approach up until now has been to let the market take care of this. If you let you don't restrain the market, then it's going to correct itself, and there will be this trickle-down effect, and everybody will benefit. And that's clearly not happening. So there probably should be more intervention in Congress in order to try and make things more equitable. I'm not sure that that's going to happen.
What would that look like? Would that look something like, Teddy Roosevelt and the Trust Busters?
Wow, that's a good question. I'm not exactly sure what that would look like. Yeah. I do think that investment in infrastructure, that's been a topic of discussion. There's certainly infrastructural issues. That's construction, but that's construction on a national level. I think that's one route to take.
Chris McCarty heads up the University of Florida's Bureau of Economic and Business Research. Still to come, pressures may be building for higher pay if you're in the right place.
We are really intensifying the war on talent.
We're back on the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Supply and demand is an economic law that applies to the job market. If you have skills in demand, unique skills, odds are your income has been rising. While Broward County's average annual pay is below that of Miami-Dade County, Fort Lauderdale can boast of having the lowest unemployment rate among the three major metropolitan areas here in South Florida. Richard Clark runs a national executive leadership consulting firm bearing his name, though he's quick to explain.
Dick Clark, when you have a name like that, everybody uses Dick Clark.
All right. Clark formed a council of economic advisors for the Fort Lauderdale Chamber of Commerce to act as a sounding board on local business conditions. And those conditions are expected to include rising wages.
Employers now feel more confident about, for two reasons, recognizing that now that their companies are growing and business is growing, that there is more consideration and commitment on their part to share that success with their employees. At the same time, Tom, there is a growing competition for that talent in whatever industry it is. And in order to be competitive, in order to keep and attract new employees, you need to consider the compensation for that position. So I think those have been the drivers for increases in wages.
So in other words, is the anticipation that these companies who plan on continuing to increase hiring will likely have to increase wages?
I think that will be one of many options they have to attract employees and to retain employees. I don't think it's going to be the main driver, but I think it's going to be one of them.
What do you think has held back wage growth in Florida and in South Florida, as we have seen the job market, as reflected in the statistics of job growth, rebound considerably since the Great Recession?
Well, first of all, we went through a period where employees were very uncertain and employers were even more uncertain, more from a public policy standpoint, but employees were uncertain whether or not they'd have a job tomorrow or not. So there was a diminished and appropriate expectation on the part of the employees that with the economy, we're not going to be getting a big raise this year.
Has that expectation, do you think, changed at all, Dick, as the employment growth has certainly returned in a big way in South Florida? Are employees, is it your sense that employees are feeling more confident, more secure in their work potential to ask and get those raises?
The answer is yes, but more significant is the fact that I have said professionally, and I think others agree, that we are really intensifying the war on talent. And what's happening is because there is a higher degree of security on the part of individual employees, there's more of a vulnerability to the company that those employees would be attracted away from their company to another company for a bigger job or increased salary or better benefits or whatever the incentive might be for them to leave. So, which makes our companies more and more concerned about how we retain talent, number one, as well as being attractive to bring in new talent.
We know tourism and hospitality is a gargantuan industry here in the Sunshine State, and it's one generally known for relatively low wages and stable wages, for that matter. So is the war on talent being felt in the hospitality industry, the large employment base via headcount here in South Florida?
Tourism used to be seasonal, and now it's year-round. So we used to have the season where we would be at the peak of visitors, and then the rest of the year would be quiet. That's not the case now. Where in tourism, it's really a full year where we have just consistent growth in tourism. So what we find is our people, leaders in the tourism industry, are looking for employees that show up for work, that do a good job while they're there, and I think that they have consistently been able to find employees to do that. Where we get more competition is in the higher end industries like biotech, manufacturing, and even in some of the service sectors where talent is particularly hard to find as that industry grows. For Florida and for South Florida in particular, emerging markets like aviation and biotechnology, this is an investment period we have where we are growing a core group of companies that will help create this sector as an important sector that will grow. I think this is a part of our growth where we have to complement our stable industry of tourism with those that complement that, but at the same time also provide higher wages for the employees that work there.
Dick Clark of executive coaching firm Clark Leadership Consulting from his home office in Broward County. Still to come, among the newest talent coming to the job market, a soon-to-be college graduate.
Graduation, yeah, that's coming up soon. And I will say that I'm scared. I'm not the least bit prepared, not mentally, for graduation.
This is the Sunshine Economy, Work and Wages in South Florida. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. Do you expect to get a pay raise over the next few years? Let us know on Twitter, @WLRN. use the hashtag Sunshine Economy. Another crop of new employees is about to enter the workforce, looking for jobs with decent pay. The December graduation season will have students launching or continuing their professional lives. Former WLRN Miami Herald News intern Jeffy Bernard will be one of those. She's due to receive two bachelor's degrees from Florida Atlantic University in December. Hasn't been easy for her affording college, preparing for a lifetime of work. And as graduation approaches, she sent us this audio diary after visiting her mom in Lehigh Acres near Fort Myers last week. It was their first visit since August.
The only way I was even able to go was because she got money together and put it in my account so that I could put gas in my car to make it over there, because I told her if I took 2 days off, it wouldn't work as far as gas for me for the rest of the week, because I barely worked to begin with, and then missing 2 days on top of that, not working 2 days, would be pretty bad for me because I'm always like on a tight budget. I work at a grocery store. I've been there since I was 15. So I've been there for almost 10 years now. Because of school, I can't really work that many days. And because of the way the scheduling system works, I rarely get an adequate amount of hours. And it's funny because I'm a college student. I applied for government assistance food stamps because I never have any money, and I was denied because they said as a student I didn't work enough hours, so I was out of luck with that. One of the reasons why I don't make enough money, even though I work 13 to 18 hours a week at about $10 an hour, 10.70, is because I have a car payment that comes out of my check weekly instead of having to pay it monthly. So after my checks, I'm left with $50 for the week. So I'm barely able to get by. The only reason I'm even able to get by is because my brothers send me money sometimes. My boyfriend helps me out a lot. I do payday loans. And even payday loans, I don't try to take out too much. I only take out about $100 because practically that's probably the only amount of money that I could probably return. But I usually end up borrowing money a lot from people and just having to pay them back in increments. But I still feel bad about it because, you know, I don't want to feel like I'm a charity case. My biggest problem is probably the car, which I need to get around here, in fact, to do a lot of the things that I do, because I'm in different places at different times of the day for extended periods of time. It really just isn't practical for me to rely on public transportation because I live in Boynton Beach. I would have had to drive all the way to Davie. However, I carpool with a friend of mine who lives on Commercial Boulevard in Fort Lauderdale. So I drive from Boynton Beach to Commercial Boulevard, and she drives the rest of the way to Davie so that we can go to class. And that's how I save on some gas. But I'm probably driving every day of the week except for Mondays. On Tuesday is the teaching assistant class that I have in Boca. On Wednesday, I'm driving to Fort Lauderdale to carpool to Davie. On Thursday, I'm driving to Commercial Boulevard again to carpool to Davie. And on Fridays, I work at the grocery store. So I'm driving to Boca Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And then Monday is my day to not really go anywhere or do anything, but it's not likely because I usually use that as the day to run errands. And because I don't have internet at home, because I can't afford it, I usually have to drive to the library. And if the library is closed by 9, I may have to drive all the way to Boca to use FAU's library. I've tried to use the Wi-Fi from the local fast food restaurants in the area, but that failed me once when I was taking an exam online, and it froze and dropped the connection, and I ended up failing that exam because it was an online class. I don't have to worry about it about after this semester because I'm graduating. Graduation, yeah, that's coming up soon. And I will say that I'm scared. I'm not the least bit prepared, not mentally, for graduation. Before I left, my mom took me out so we could go, you know, shopping. She got me some groceries so that I could come back with some stuff when I left. And she asked me, she's like, well, what are your plans after you graduate? And I told her, well, you know, I'm coming home. I'm coming home for the 9 months until, you know, I start graduate school. And she's like, no, that's not what I mean. When you're finished with school, what are your plans? That's what she said. And I looked at her and I was confused because I've never really sat down and thought about what I want to do as far as the profession. I have honestly not really thought about what it's like out there. And to be honest, it's because I'm afraid that I'm honestly not going to get a job. I feel like I'm going to end up doing something that I did not go to school for, and I'm going to be unhappy. I don't know if there's even a guarantee that I will find something. And if I go out and actually find a job somewhere else, starting out, I know it's going to be a struggle, but I'm used to that. It's just scary to face the fact that even after all this schooling and education, I'm still going to be out here struggling. It's no, things are costly, and I try to calculate. I'm barely getting by now, but I know I'm not making that much money. I don't work that much, but I'm barely getting by, and it sucks to struggle all the time. I wouldn't want to leave school, you know, struggling and just to go struggle some more in the real world.
Jeffrey Bernard finishing up her two college degrees and about to enter working in the Sunshine economy, hoping for a good wage. We have all the income data and job growth data on our website at WLRN.org under the Sunshine Economy tab. The conversation on Twitter, Nadia tweeted, high employment means nothing when wages are low and the majority of jobs are part-time. Glenn writes, the hospitality industry is at the mercy of disposable income. When folks feel good, they celebrate. No increase expected. And Matt tweeted us this, I found a nickel on the street in 2010. Wanda Miles is our technical director. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening.
You wanna hot body? You wanna Bugatti? You wanna Maserati? You better work. You wanna Lamborghini? Sip martinis, look hot in a bikini. You better work. You wanna live fancy, live in a big mansion, party in France. You better work. You better work. You better work. You better work. Now get to work. We'll be right back.